Even people who really like to cook have one thing they're really good at, right? Today's guest found he had an aptitude for bread, a love for baking bread and learning more about how to make it and how to make it better. Good thing, too, because his last name is Baker. Josie Baker bakes bread in San Francisco and writes about it both in a blog online and in his new book, Josie Baker Bread. With a name like Josie Baker, what else could he do? He clearly has not come up with an answer yet. Josie did work as an elementary school science teacher before moving into baking full time. Josie Baker, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much. You're making me feel famous. It's very nice.
There's just so much enthusiasm that comes through in the blog and the book. It's hard not to feel like you're standing in the presence of somebody at least has baking thrust upon them.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, that's the way it feels. So I'm glad I'm able to convey that.
How did the baking get thrust upon you? How did this become full-time work for you?
You know, I started baking at home about 4 years ago. My buddy George was traveling through San Francisco, and we were chatting one day in my kitchen, and he had this little container with him. It's a little brown lump in it. It looked kind of weird. And I said, George, what is that? He said, well, that's sourdough starter. I said, why do you have sourdough starter? You can't even bake good bread in a home oven. And he kind of chuckled. He said, yeah, you can, man. And he scribbled some instructions down, and a few days later I tried it. And I haven't been able to stop.
So the brown lump of clay was the starter, and I mean, you didn't even know what a starter was at that time, or did you?
I'd heard about them, but I'd never actually seen one. Nevertheless, worked with one. But it turns out to be, you know, it can be a little sensitive and finicky, but it's, I mean, baking bread is something people have done for many thousands of years. So it's, you know, it's not rocket science or anything.
Well, as you point out, it's actually fairly simple, and this is one of those books where you don't list all the tools you need up front. Why did you choose to take that step?
Well, so it's a beginner's bread book. The first two chapters are definitely written for beginners, and then the rest of the book is written for everybody. But I wanted to make the first-time baker's experience of reading the book as unintimidating and, you know, as exciting and playful as possible. And so I put myself in the shoes of that first-time baker, which was me just a few years before I wrote the book. And I remember being really intimidated at the beginning of the book when there was this long section listing all these tools that I didn't know what they were. And, you know, I definitely didn't have them. But it gave me the impression of like, wow, this is a complex thing, and I need all sorts of special stuff, and I don't have it, and I don't know if I'm cut out for this.
The barriers to entry just appeared too big. Huh?
Yeah, and so, you know, I did away with and then the first recipe in the book is, you know, it's called Your First Loaf of Bread, and it's just the most basic recipe I could come up with the fewest ingredients and fewest equipment and fewest steps. And I wrote it that way to give home bakers the experience of, you know, to lower that barrier of entry so that you'll just try it. And then lo and behold, you bake this loaf of bread that really doesn't take much work, nor many ingredients. And you realize, holy moly, I can bake bread at home. And it's good. And I had fun doing it.
Were you as enthusiastic, Josie, about teaching as you appear to be about making bread?
You know, I was. I was when I started out. You know, I mean, I'd been working with kids my whole life, and that's what I studied as an undergrad. And you know, I had a job at UC Berkeley that when I first got the job, it was my dream job, and the group of people that I worked with were at the top of their game, and you know, just over the years, I kind of lost the passion for the work, and. I have tons of respect for the work and as I do the people who are doing it, but it just didn't really hit me the way that it did at first. And I was on the hunt actually for something that really got me excited. And I tried out a bunch of different things before bread came along. I was almost about to go back to school for psychology actually.
Really?
Yeah. But I missed the deadline for applying to schools, and I said, maybe back to the drawing board on this.
Right, and then George showed up with a starter, and that's
yeah,
what she
it's meant to be, man.
The teacher in you certainly surfaces in the first few recipes that you call lessons. And you already talked about the fact that you didn't want to freak people out with exotic tools or anything like that. Is there anything especially exotic in the required ingredients for making these first few loaves of bread?
No, not at all. The first two recipes. The first recipe is just bread flour, water, salt, and yeast. So that's it. And lots of people have yeast somewhere in one of their cupboards, even if it's, you know, a couple years old or something. It should be fine if it's in one of those little packets. But, oh, well.
So, yeah, the music is up, but we got a little time here. But the point is that if the packet is not opened, you're okay.
Sorry, it just makes me want to dance, you know?
It's a bit of a slow dance.
Do you mind? Would you like to?
Go ahead. Yeah, we can do this over the phone. We'll come back and talk more with Josie Baker and his great level of enthusiasm about making bread. His book is called Josie Baker Bread. Get baking, make great bread, be happy. That's all coming up on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back. We'll take your phone calls and emails as well. Join us with Josie in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Josie Baker. To be more exact, the baker, Josie Baker. Last name and occupation, one and the same. His book is Josie Baker Bread, Get Baking, Make Great Bread, Be Happy. He really shares his enthusiasm for the art of making bread in this book, and you can share the conversation with us on the Jefferson Exchange. Share your own stories about baking, successes or failures, or maybe a few bunch of things in the middle of the road there. 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Josie, allow us a laugh, because the unbridled enthusiasm that you convey from very early on in this book does come with a warning to read the entire recipe before acting. Please explain.
Yes. Yeah. You know, you got to know what you're getting into. And one of the trickiest things about baking bread is being patient and fitting it in to the rest of your life, because, you know, bread will not be rushed, and it's good to know what you're getting into, and you know, you got to kind of plan out the whole life of the loaf when you start. And now there's a lot of flexibility, and I tell you exactly how to make it flexible. And you know, the short version is you use your refrigerator. And you can basically leave the dough in the fridge at a couple different stages for, you know, several days. And so it's not hard to make it fit your life, as long as, you know, you're going to be around for the next week or so.
But it takes some planning. It's kind of like having kids or pets or something. You can't leave them completely unintended for huge long periods.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, if you're trying to have a fresh loaf of bread for dinner tonight, and you know, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's kind of too short of a turnaround there. You got to plan ahead a little bit. So, you know, when you decide, okay, I want to bake some bread today, say I'm going to start this loaf today, but I'm going to have it for dinner tomorrow.
All right. So you have to, again, plan ahead here. Let's take a phone call here. We have Bill and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Josie Baker. His book is Josie Baker Bread.
Hi,
hey, Bill.
Having me. And I'd like to take advantage of him in there and maybe get a question answered. I love bread and all the different types, and especially sourdough. And I also very much into fermenting foods. And I know as soon as you cook fermented foods, you call all the benefits, but they're super good for your health. And I was wondering if there's any kind of recipes with low heat for making bread where you keep the fermented benefits of helping your system digest and immune system in your gut.
So fermented but baked as well. All right. That's a good challenge you provide there, Bill. Thanks for that.
That is a very good question. I've actually brought that up myself with other bakers and scientists alike. And, you know, I'm sorry to say I don't have a great answer for you for a bread that you can bake and not kill off that helpful bacteria in there. You know, what I will suggest is making bread that absolutely is sourdough. So most of the recipes in the book are sourdough. We just start off with commercial yeast again in order to lower that barrier of entry. But also using a good amount of whole grains in your bread. Most of the recipes in the book are about a third whole wheat flour, but you can easily up that. And there's a whole chapter on whole wheat breads, which are all 100% whole wheat, and then there's a whole chapter on breads made from other grains, like kamut and spelt and rye. And what a lot of people find is those breads are actually a lot easier to digest. And, obviously whole grain bread has more nutrients and vitamins in it than bread made with white flour, and even more so with sourdough over commercial yeast. So
let's get right to the root of the terminology then, Josie. Where does the term sourdough come from? What's going on there that doesn't go on other breads?
Yeah, so a sourdough, I think most people think that sourdough bread is sour tasting. And some sourdough bread is sour tasting, but it's not necessarily sour tasting. What it means is it's made with a sourdough starter or a culture or a mother. And what that is that's a mixture of flour and water. And what I suggest is whole grain flour and water and wild yeast and bacteria. And so what you do by fermenting your dough basically in another stage, which is your sourdough starter, and then using that starter to ferment your dough, you're gaining the benefits of basically some pre-digestion of those nutrients, and they're more available to you. And so
So is this just an extension of what you introduced us to on the second loaf of bread, the pre-ferment?
Yes, and so the pre-ferment with commercial yeast, you get a little bit of these benefits, but you get big benefits in flavor. Basically, if you can lengthen out that fermentation, you're gonna get good things going on. And the first chapter is all made with commercial yeast, but then the second chapter is when we get into sourdough, and that's where we're at with the remainder of the book is all sourdough breads.
Okay, so back to loaf number one. Interesting thing, bread flour and all-purpose flour are not the same thing?
They're not the same thing. Yeah, it's they're close. They're both white flour. And so what that means is, you have a wheat berry, which just looks like a piece of rice, basically. It's a little grain, a little seed. And if you grind that up into powder, then you have whole wheat flour, right? The whole of the wheat. And that is the starchy part of the wheat berry, the endosperm, and then it's also wheat bran and wheat germ. And so if you take out the wheat bran and the wheat germ, then you have white flour, right? And so white flour, you can either have it be bread flour or all-purpose flour or pastry flour. And depending on what type of wheat you use, that is going to dictate which of those types of flour you have. And that's really just a matter of how strong the flour is, how much protein is in the flour. If you're making a bread, you want a flour that has a little bit of a higher protein content than if you're making something, say, like biscuits or cake, which you want a really tender crumb, and you're not looking to be able to make a dough that you can stretch and can fill with air and make these nice big bubbles inside. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I get the sense from this discussion and from the book itself that you really enjoy the touchy-feely part of making bread yourself.
I sure do. I like the way you said the touchy-feely part. Do you mean like the act of touching, or more like the lovey-dovey hippie stuff?
Either way you want to take it. But I mean, the actual manipulation of the dough sounds like it's a lot of fun. You really get a good tactile sense for this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that I fell in love with it is this tactile thing. It's this handcraft that, you got to roll your sleeves up and get covered in dough. That's just part of the process. And it is so fun. And it requires you to be present in the moment, which is not the case for a lot of the ways that I think we spend our time these days. I love the internet as much as the next person, but there's lots of other things that we can do that bring us to the here and now in a more direct way.
We are talking to Josie Baker, who lucked out in the last name department because he likes to make bread. His book is Josie Baker Bread, Get Baking, Make Great Bread, Be Happy. There's a lot of enthusiasm in the book and in the person itself, as you're detecting. You can join Josie Baker and me on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 with questions or comments about bread making and the whole process that Josie takes us through in the book, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, email address jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Jim in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Josie Baker.
Good timing for this. We recently bought a KitchenAid, and I've been trying to make ciabatta, and you talk about touchy-feely, more sticky-feely. And I have a question. I've failed twice now, and mainly because I probably haven't weighed out the ingredients properly.
Uh-huh.
I did more measuring.
Uh-huh.
So I wonder if you can give me some insights on making a really good ciabatta.
Ciabatta bread. Okay. And thanks for that, Jim. Appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, ciabatta is it's one of the stickier bread doughs you'll encounter, and that's because it's got a lot of water in it. And so the water-to-flour ratio is pretty high. And in baker talk, we call that a high-hydration dough. And so, you know, without getting too deep into what you've been doing and where your bread's fallen short, yes, I can tell you that weighing your ingredients is it's just a lot more accurate than measuring by volume, because depending on how you measure out a cup of flour, you know, it can be 120 grams or it could be 160 grams. And so obviously, you know, you multiply that by a few cups and you're looking at a really big difference in the amount of flour in your bread dough.
That is a big difference. So that would make a 25% difference in volume.
Yeah. And so, you know, what that means is your bread dough, depending on which side of the spectrum you fall on with your scooping, you're going to have either a bread dough that's too stiff, you know, it's got too much flour in it, or you're going to have a bread dough that's too slack, that's got too much water in it. And either one is not going to lead to the optimum result. So weighing is more accurate. I'd suggest that you get a scale, get a nice little, you know, digital kitchen scale. It makes it so much easier. I promise you. Just take the plunge. You'll never go back.
A digital scale, okay.
Yep.
Does it take some getting used to doing the weighing part rather than the measuring part? We're so used to using the measuring cups and leveling off.
Yeah, it takes a little bit, but you know, you put your mixing bowl on there, and then you you know, you toss in your ingredients one by one, and then in between you can pair the scale, which just means you reset it to zero, and you weigh out all your ingredients, you know, to be exactly what your recipe calls for. There's no gray area when you're weighing them. And then you can eliminate that from the equation. Okay, I know I have the right amount of my ingredients, just so long as you weigh things accurately. But then with ciabatta bread, it's you know, all bread follows the same basic structure. Most bread, almost all bread, you know, you mix the ingredients together. You develop the gluten somehow, whether that's kneading by hand or in your KitchenAid or through a series of folds, which is what I recommend in the book. And that happens either at the beginning or during your bulk fermentation or your first fermentation. And so once you're done with that, which can take anywhere from, you know, a half hour for a very short bulk fermentation up to, you know, a couple of days if you're using the fridge to draw it out, then you cut the dough into the loaf weight, and then you usually go through some sort of shaping, and then you have your proof or your final rise, your second fermentation, and then you bake that thing. And so, you know, there's many different ways to make a ciabatta bread, just like there's many different ways to make, you know, any other type of bread. Do we still have the caller on the line?
Yeah, he actually is still there.
Hey, so what's wrong with your bread? What's it like when you bake it off? Why aren't you happy with it?
Oh, you there? No, I guess he is gone.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, well. Well.
Right, so anyway, some steps that can be taken. I want to ask in a general sense, though, about when we're talking about handling the ingredients. Is there any sifting involved here?
No, I don't do any sifting. That can be really helpful, you know, if you have lumps of of flour, or if the flour is really compacted, especially if you're measuring by volume, because, you know, if you've got super compacted flour, you're going to get more flour in you know, your one cup measurement than if it's really light and airy. No sifting necessary for the recipes in the book.
Okay, so I get the sense that the science teacher in you certainly helps out the baker in you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something you've learned a lot about the steps and what's going on behind the scenes, or at least in the physical world that we can't necessarily see.
Yeah, that was another one of the things that made me so intrigued with bread baking is it was this activity that was both you know, creative and it was an expression and craft, but it was also, there was all this mysterious stuff going on that I didn't understand, and you know, my background in science led me to investigate it. With the knowledge that there's some hard science going on behind all of these things that are mysterious, and I want to find out what it is. And even today, you know, I mean, you know, been baking professionally for a few years now, there's still all sorts of stuff that I don't understand on a scientific level, but I understand on a practical level, you know, and
how to make it work for you.
Exactly. Yeah. And over time, you know, I learn something new every day.
Josie Baker is our guest on The Exchange. His book is Josie Baker Bread. Here is N-Word Nash Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, I have a question about selecting wheat berries, because years ago I made some sprouted bread, and it was just wheat.
Yeah.
And we sprouted it and then ground it up and put it in the oven, and it came out with this almost like cake thing, and it was really good. It was sweet, naturally sweet.
Yeah.
But then I got out of it, and all, you know, I had all kinds of issues and stuff. And then now I'm back to just kind of, you know, making my own bread and stuff, the sprouted stuff. But I have yet, for now it's been about a year, I've been getting the wrong wheat, I think. What kind of wheat produces the sweetest bread?
Okay, good question. Thanks, Edward.
That's great. That's very cool that you're doing that. We're doing some sprouting of grains as well. At the mill, and it's really exciting to see what types of flavors you can get out of these little grains. But
does it add nutrition as well as flavor?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yep. And
so you're still thinking about the sweetest
bread. The sweetest. You know, I mean, there are so many different types of wheat that are we're not used to thinking of wheat the way we think of produce, you know, like for instance tomatoes. We're not used to thinking of you know, when all these different types of tomatoes started showing up at farmers markets, you know, it was like a revelation, you know. But before that, you know, a tomato was a tomato to most people, and that's kind of where we're at with wheat. But we're starting to see that there's actually a whole world out there of different wheat varieties, and they all have their own characteristics. So for your sprouted, you know, I'm kind of partial to to finding your grains from as locally sourced as possible, and so if you have a local source for grains, you know, I think you can make it work depending on what you're going for in your finished bread. You know, a loaf of bread made from sprouted wheat is not going to be as light and airy as a loaf of bread made from white flour. That's because it's got all that other delicious and healthy stuff in it that white flour does not. But I think it probably would be more prudent to pay close attention to your sprouting process and then your bread making process, because where the wheat is in the sprouting and then subsequently how you make that into bread, that's going to really impact the final flavors of your loaf.
So it could be just a couple of days or weeks either side of optimum that makes a big difference in flavor?
Totally, yeah. And air on the earlier side. I mean, you want the sprouts to come out. You want to see them poking out. But then you want to make it into bread, you know, immediately. You don't, like what we do in the bakery is we actually let our sprouted grains actually sit in the fridge for a little while. And as time goes on, you get more sourness in that. And, you know, it's all delicious. But, yeah, sprout them and use them right away. And then don't let your bulk fermentation go too far.
Okay. Much more to talk about bread making with Josie Baker. His book is Josie Baker Bread. Yes, Baker is his last name as well as his occupation. We'll come back and talk more with him and take more of your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. It's our final segment of the day. We're talking to Josie Baker, the San Francisco baker, last name and occupation one and the same, about his book, Josie Baker Bread, a book of recipes and bread theory and all-around enthusiasm for making bread. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the listening area in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Josie, just to come back to the basic procedure, the stuff that you're going to do with all loaves of bread, and I want to come back to the loaf number one. This is actually before you even get to the pre-ferment. How long do you need to let bread dough rise before baking? And what about punching down or some of the other steps I remember seeing over the years?
Yeah, so, you know, again, that depends on the recipe but and what the ingredients are. But in that first recipe, I suggest you mix everything together, and then you let it sit for a couple hours, and then you stick it in the fridge. And at minimum, you want to stick it in the fridge for an hour or so that it cools, so that the dough cools down, and it'll be a lot easier to handle because it's kind of a wet dough, and especially for your first loaf of bread, I don't want you to freak out because the dough is too hard to handle. But the nice thing about it is that if you leave it in the fridge for longer, it'll actually get better. And so you can leave it in the fridge for, you know, 4 or 5 days and then take it out and shape it into a loaf, and it will have developed all these really nice complex flavors. And so, you know, at a minimum, your bulk fermentation is going to take a few hours. At a maximum, it's going to take, you know, 5 days.
What are some of the common first mistakes that people make in their first few loaves of bread? What were some of the ones that you made?
Yeah, well, so I think the most drastic mistake you can make is to have an unsuccessful first loaf and then say, oh, I can't do this. I'm not a baker. I give up. And I was fortunate enough to not have that experience. And, you know, it obviously spawned a new passion. But aside from that, I think it can be really tricky for novice bakers to have the patience that is required. Again, you cannot force the bread. It does not like that. It's just, there's no way around it. There's fermentation occurring, and you need that fermentation to run its course before you move the bread dough to its next step. So there's that. There is something that a caller mentioned earlier, which is measuring by volume can work out just fine. I'm not trying to say that it you're going to fail if you measure by volume. The problem with it is it's just a lot less consistent and accurate than measuring by weight. So, you know, if you're really trying to have the highest chance for success, if you measure your ingredients by weight, you're going to eliminate that variable from the equation. So I think it's great to measure by weight.
I should point out that the book does provide both. So, for example, there's I'm looking at the whole wheat cinnamon raisin recipe where you show a teaspoon of sourdough starter or 6 grams, a quarter cup of cool water or 60 grams, a third of a cup of whole wheat flour or 50 grams. So it's all spelled out both ways. The cool water thing is one of the things I wondered about is how specific you have to be in some of these things, lengths of time, temperature of ingredients, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's another thing that, you know, when I first started baking, I never took the temperature of water. I didn't do that for the first 6 months. And, you know, the bread turned out good. And at that point, in my eyes, the bread was great because I was making it and it was edible. And, you know, that was that. But the temperature of the water, furthermore, the temperature of the dough makes a really big difference on the speed of fermentation. And so, you know, if you can muster to pay attention to the temperature early on, you're gonna again take that out of the equation, and you'll have a better chance of success. But you know, if that sounds intimidating to you, if that sounds like, you know what, this is too much, I don't want to deal with the temperature, then just don't do it. You know, and when you feel like you got a few loaves under your belt, and you're ready to get a little bit more exact about everything, then you break out that thermometer and you start paying attention to that variable.
All right, let's take a call here. We have Isabel in Klamath Falls on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Josie Baker. We're talking about Josie Baker bread.
Yes. My question is, I've been making all my bread since the early 70s, and I've developed all kinds of little funny things that I do that I like, but lately, like in the last year or so, the crust has started detaching from the top, and I'm wondering, what did I do that has made that happen?
Oh, Mike, what's your name?
Isabel.
Isabel, I feel your pain. we call that a flying roof.
Yes.
Yep, and I talk about the flying roof in the book, in the chapter on breads made from other grains, because we have that experience sometimes with our rye bread. And so is your bread a rye bread or is it a wheat bread?
Oh, I put any kind of thing in there. I use every grain or, you know, yeah.
Okay, well, so that might be part of it, because
right?
Basically what's happening is, you know, if I had to make one guess, if you're making bread that's mostly, you know, white flour or wheat flour or spelt, anything other than rye, I would guess that it's overproofing. And you know what I mean when
well,
I say that?
Yeah, I do know overproofing, but in 20 minutes, really?
Well, so that could also mean, so if you're only proofing it for 20 minutes, then it could mean...
And it reaches the top of the pan, and then I bake it, and then the top comes off.
Uh-huh. So,
whoa!
Okay, so another thing that could be happening is you could be going too far in your bulk fermentation, in your first
now
fermentation.
Now that's possible, because I take several days.
Okay. So what you can do is just somehow pull it back a little bit, right? So either stick it in the fridge and/or... just shorten the amount of time that you're bulk fermenting, because what it sounds like could be happening is you're developing too much acidity in your dough, thereby weakening the gluten, and so the outside of it blows up and looks fine, right? But the inside of it, the gluten basically breaks and it collapses inside.
Yeah, that's possible. So if instead of sitting it on the counter for 2 or 3 days, if I put it in the fridge...
Sit it on the counter for like a few hours or so,
uh-huh.
And then stick it in the fridge. I mean, how much does it increase in volume between when you first mix it and when you shape it into a loaf?
Oh, I start off with just the yeast, and I use potato water because I found that it keeps it from molding as quick. I can keep bread for 2 weeks with no problem if I use water that I boiled my potatoes in.
Oh, cool. That's a
yeah.
cool trick.
Oh, yeah.
I like
sure
that.
I'm sure it's the... what is that? Solanine, that's the green sprout, you know, the green color on potatoes.
Hey, I don't know.
Anyhow, it keeps it from molding. So I do that, and I let it sit for a couple hours with just the yeast and maybe a cup or two of whole wheat flour or spelt or, you know, all this stuff. The different
cool.
Cornmeal, oatmeal, barley flakes, whatever I can find.
Wow,
yeah.
All kinds of stuff. That's great.
Oh, that's great. I salute you.
And then I'll add a little bit more. It starts out as a slurry, and then the next day maybe I'll make it so that I could actually, you know, handle it.
Right.
And then the third day, then maybe I'll put my honey and I put the salt in last because I've always heard that inhibits the yeast. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Right. So another thing you could do is you could try if you want to just pick one variable that'll have the keep things really simple is you what temperature do you pay attention to what temperature water you use when you mix your bread dough?
It's the temperature of my hand.
Yeah, so maybe use a little bit cooler water. And so what that'll do is that'll slow down the fermentation so that you can get to it when you get to it, and hopefully it won't have gone too far in that bulk fermentation leading to the flying roof there.
All right. Isabel, thanks so much for the call.
You've
gotten a lot of great stuff out of your bread-making process, as we get out of Josie's stuff, too. Josie, when you get into a sourdough in Chapter 2 in the book,
yeah.
Obviously you talk about the starter. You talk about it's hard to kill a starter. starter, but you have to nurture it. I mean, what are some of the things you do to nurture your starter?
Well, you got to talk to it. Can't ignore that guy. You'll make it sad and unhappy, and sad and unhappy starter makes sad unhappy bread. But no, aside from that, you can basically just you gotta pay attention to it regularly by feeding it flour and water. And so before you feed it flour and water, you have to compost most of it, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to leave behind a small amount of that seed culture, which you can then inoculate the fresh flour and water that you mix in. So if you don't want to deal with it, the best way, the starter is happiest, if it's being ignored, it's happiest in the fridge. And so you stick it in the fridge, and you can leave it there for a couple weeks or something. But if you're trying to really, especially if you're trying to start a new starter from scratch, you got to be diligent about feeding it every day or every other day, whole grain flour and water. And what I suggest in the book is whole wheat flour, but another great, perhaps even more successful way to go about that is with whole grain rye flour and water. And if you're taking good care of your starter and it's active and healthy and happy, then you can use it to make, in my opinion, the best kind of bread there is. But if your starter is not active and healthy and happy, then you're not going to be able to make good sourdough bread. That's the foundation of sourdough bread, is that starter culture.
A couple of terms that you mentioned when you and Isabel were talking about her bread process, proofing. What's the proofing process?
Yeah, proofing is just the word for after you've shaped your dough into a loaf and you're letting it rise again. That's called the proof, proofing. Proof that everything is going right, or proof that everything is going wrong.
One way or the other, you get the proof, right?
You get the proof. And with the proof, with that part of the process, I always say it's better to err on the side of underproofing rather than overproofing. Because if you overproof, like Isabel and I were just talking about, you're going to have a big problem. Either your loaf is going to turn out really flat, or that's if you're doing like a hearth loaf, a freeform loaf, or if you're doing a pan loaf, you might end up with a flying roof, or the top of it might sort of cave in. But if you underproof, the most that's going to happen is that your bread is going to be, a little on the denser side. It's not going to achieve its full volume.
You had mentioned, Josie, right at the top about not believing you could make good bread in a home oven. You said, and you ultimately figured out, yeah, you can. Grumpy John of Grants Pass wants to ask about making bread without using an oven.
All right.
So that was his email message. What?
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Let's see. I got it. Well, oh. I kind of got it.
Okay. Dutch ovens, maybe?
So you can, the method that I described in the book for making pizza, actually the first half of that happens on your stovetop.
A frying pan, I noticed that, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, I mean, just to get real creative, you could actually, you could do frying pan bread by just baking one, you have to spread it out real thin, like a pizza, you cook one side, and then you flip it over and cook the other side. You can also cook flatbreads on a barbecue grill. Same way, you got to oil up that grill nice so that the bread dough doesn't stick and get it nice and hot. But you stretch the dough out nice and thin, flatbread style. You grill one side and then you flip it and top it with whatever you want and grill the other side, and then you're good to go. And you get really nice flavors from doing that. You get nice char from the flames.
Mm-hmm, yeah, sounds like some good fun stuff in there. Ray in Roseburg sent in an email. He says, several years ago, my wife always made our bread, which I loved. She invited me to help. When I retired, I took over the job and really enjoyed it. People would ask for my recipe, and I found it difficult to respond as I got to the place where I was doing a lot of experimenting, and I seemed to sometimes go by feel, as I loved to get my hands on the dough. It was fun. Unfortunately, when I lost my wife, it took a lot of joy out of it, but it does flash through now and then. So I'm glad to hear that, that Ray does still get back to this from time to time. But a lot of joy in bread making. I get that from you and from Ray and from Isabel as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry to hear about Ray's loss there. But it is one of the most special things about bread is it is something that is shared with other people. You know, often the making of the bread, but even more often the eating of the bread or the breaking of the bread. And you know, it's played this role in human culture for thousands and thousands of years, and it continues to play that role. And there's something intangible and very nourishing about that process, and it's definitely one of the things that made me fall in love, and one of the things that I hope to help other people discover with the book.
Well, it's the enthusiasm certainly comes bursting through in the book. It's called Josie Baker Bread: Get Baking, Make Great Bread, Be Happy. Josie Baker himself has been our guest. Josie, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much for having me, man. I had a great time.
All right, we too.